struck, actually, before I begin my presentation, with a comment on Amina's presentation. I mean, two things struck me. One is, we used to think that people like Saddam Hussein torture, and we don't. That's what we used to think. And the second thing is the doctors there were really under threat of death or maiming or severe suffering when they engaged in torture. But that's not been true with the torturers used by the United States. They haven't been threatened with anything except perhaps career jeopardy. So we have some differences. But we've also had some changes, and I think I'm going to try to tell you where we are, but I have to tell you the title slide here has a lie on it, or an implied lie, because it says it's about the CIA, but that picture, of course, is not about the CIA. It's an Abu Ghraib picture that you all know. Well, why is that? And the reason is that we have no information, no pictures, no documents, nothing except a handful of investigative journalists who've gotten some leaks that tell us what's gone on in the black sites. What we do know, as you all know, a place I never thought our country would get, that the confirmation of Attorney General might turn on whether he was willing to say that waterboarding is a crime, and of course he wasn't. I never thought we'd reach that point. I'm not going to go through the whole history, but let's go back to what U.S. policy used to be, at least in the U.S. military, the Army Field Manual going back to the 1980s, which, as you see, had an unequivocal, unambiguous prohibition on the use of torture. It concluded the use of force, mental torture, threats, insults, exposure to unpleasant or inhumane treatment of any kind is prohibited by law. That was the basis for the U.S. military's policy before the so-called war on terror. Now, the CIA was in a little different position, as we know. Back in the 60s, it was doing experiments in mind control and had the Kubark Manual, which some of you may know about. And one element of the Kubark Manual was to use various forms of psychological torture against people. And that never really ended. Even though there were congressional hearings and investigations of the CIA, the mindset never really ended. And you see the 1983 training manual talked in very graphic terms about inducing psychological regression the techniques including isolation, severe humiliation, sensory overload, all the kind of techniques that we now know have been used. So in the background, we had the Army Manual on the one hand, which was Geneva Convention-based, and then we had the CIA. Well, now, after the September 11th attacks, and the CIA saw an opportunity to resurrect some of the techniques that had been in its own manuals, and they based it on this program called SEER, Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape, which has been used for decades to train American soldiers to withstand the kinds of horrific treatment they would get from governments or entities or terrorists or whoever else that didn't abide by the Geneva Conventions, and they actually tortured these soldiers as a way of training them. And they used stress positions and isolation, temperature extremes, all kinds of things to try to inoculate them in case they were captured. But it was never intended to be used affirmatively. After 9/11, the CIA decided to, as they said, others have said, reverse engineer those techniques, and they were used at the black sites, as far as we know. The Defense Department actually got into the act after the CIA because it was their SEER techniques, and there were psychologists involved in developing this reverse engineering that combined with the command, which was dissatisfied with the information getting from Guantanamo detainees. So they developed methods, and the Justice Department came along and said it's okay legally, and they developed what they called standard operating procedures by the end of 2002, and of course then all hell broke loose, and we know we had routinized torture first at Guantanamo, then at Abu Ghraib, but that's not the end of it. Bagram Air Force Base and many, many other sites with the infamous frequent flyer program in Guantanamo to keep people awake, that nakedness wasn't just that picture that I showed you in the beginning, but it was routinized at these facilities, and the use of total isolation, the Army itself found, was routine and repetitive. And added to that, the Red Cross found that conditions of confinement were tantamount to torture. Now, these were the military facilities. I want to emphasize, this was not the black sites because we have so little information. But the revelations of Abu Ghraib started a campaign by many people to stop these abuses, and it has had some success. The McCain Amendment in 2005 said you've got to abide by the Army Field Manual. The prohibition on cruel and human degrading treatment applies overseas. Of course, Bush tried to undermine that immediately with his signing statement. Last year, the Supreme Court said, contrary to the government's position, the Bush administration's position, the common Article 3, which means it's the provision of the Geneva Conventions that applies to anybody at any time, regardless whether you're a prisoner of war, that applied to the Guantanamo detainees. And a year ago, in September 2006, basically the pressure on the Pentagon succeeded and the good guys won. What I mean by that is the lawyers and the doctors and the commanders and the generals who wanted to abide by the Geneva Conventions. They issued a new field manual last September and said, we from now on are going to affirm the Geneva Conventions, we're going to give up the use of torture, and we're going to use the golden rule standard that if we don't want these acts done on an American soldier, we're not going to do it to enemies in our custody. The Bush, however, got the Military Commissions Act passed this next month, which abolished habeas corpus and made the definitions of war crimes vague, but in an analysis by Physicians for Human Rights and Human Rights First, all the listed techniques on the screen, we determine by medical and legal criteria, are indeed war crimes. Still, despite the effort of the administration to undercut the Geneva Conventions, they didn't really succeed. These are still war crimes. So by the end of 2006, last year, we have the military basically giving up the use of torture with some exceptions we can talk about. And we have legislation that reinforces that these are war crimes. But that didn't stop it, and I'll get to that in a minute. But as part of this effort, we know that the medical community played a very important role. The AMA, to its credit, as well as the American Psychological Association, said it's not even enough for doctors not to engage in torture. We don't want them involved in interrogation, period, full stop. That is a real advance. The organizations indeed lobbied for stopping torture, and that was helpful too. The American Psychological Association, the struggle has been much more difficult because psychologists have been so deeply involved in development of these techniques. They allow participation in interrogation, although not in torture, but they specifically condemned, in their convention last summer, they condemned 21 specific enhanced interrogation techniques. But the White House would not give up. And this year, this summer, they reinterpret the Military Commissions Act with an executive order specifically about the CIA. Now remember, I said these are actually war crimes. But they said, well, no, they're not. And they purport to prohibit torture, but it's nonspecific. They won't acknowledge what techniques they're using. But just to give you an idea what this executive order is about, this is how the administration plays fast and loose, reinterprets the law time and time again. And here, just to give you an example, they redefined humiliating and degrading treatment as willful and outrageous acts of personal abuse done for the purpose of humiliating or degrading the individual, get this now, in a manner so serious that any reasonable person would deem the acts to be beyond the bounds of human decency. So it has to be, if there's a single person who doesn't think it's beyond the bounds of human decency, you can do it. Typical approach of this administration. The current CIA director, General Hayden has said publicly that the CIA will not abide by the Army Field Manual, which is where we started, that it's contrary to the purpose, mission, and skills of the CIA. He said it's good for those soldiers who aren't trained, but our guys are really well trained. Probably true. Trained, unfortunately, in torture. And his legal position is that no one has ever claimed, except most of the world, that the field manual exhausts the legal interrogation techniques. And he not only says that in order to be tortured, it has to shock the conscience, it has to shock the conscience badly. This Doonesbury was actually from 2 years ago, but I am finding it completely relevant to what's going on now. This was actually at the time Gonzalez was nominated for Attorney General, and just before his nomination, the Justice Department withdrew the infamous torture memo defining pain at a level so severe that you are in the risk of death in order to get him confirmed. Can you all read this? I'll read it to you. It's really wonderful. The first one says, good afternoon. My name is Havoc. This is CIA Training Course 563, Interrogation Protocols. As you know, it's unclear whether this class would be viable. But now, following Gonzalez, we can say following the executive order, we're good to go. So welcome to the world of riding the dog, pop top, burning hair, juice ball, double dipping, and pounding the marbles. What about gating the walrus? No, that's covered by Geneva. So that's kind of where we are, that they claim to have limitations. But A, they won't tell us what they're doing, and B, they claim enormous authority to do terrible things to people. And that is actually why the nominee for Attorney General would not say that waterboarding is a crime. Because if he did, all the individuals in the CIA or contractors to the CIA at the black sites who've been engaged in these activities would be, as they should be, at risk of prosecution. Now, what's the legacy of all this? We will put this to an end. I am perfectly confident this will come to an end, that eventually we will ban, if we have to, technique by technique, and we may end up having to do that. There's legislation in Congress now to enact the Army Field Manual as applicable to the CIA, and there will be attempts to legislate against specific techniques. But even when that happens, we will have paid, and human beings, our country and the world, will have paid a horrific and continuing cost. First of all, as we know, you have to watch The Daily Show to really fully appreciate what's happened to language, that torture has been redefined to permit torture. And one of the implications is it's really created space for torturers around the world. The people who are most suffering from U.S. policy are those people in the most repressive governments in the world who now only have to point to the United States to justify what they're doing. And beyond that, it's undermined human rights values, because if we don't have the value against torture, what are other human rights values worth? And the long-lasting effect is the whole kind of case-by-case legalistic approach to a definition that's one sentence long. Basically, torture is the infliction of severe pain on a human being. And by making it legalistic, it makes it uncertain. Torture, you know it when you see it. But by saying we don't know when we see it, we have to send it to lawyers, it creates a permissive environment in which the people who want to torture are given license. And the last thing is, we can't forget the thousands upon thousands, not tens, not hundreds, but thousands upon thousands of people who were victims of this policy. Physicians for Human Rights is engaged in evaluations of about a dozen former detainees in U.S. custody. And as I've read the reports by our consultants having clinical evaluations, it really brings tears to your eyes to know what's happened to these people, that we know that psychological torture is the most long-lasting in its impact, and we have ruined many, many people's lives. So what should we do? And this is the end. We have to restore national and professional values. We need to ban the techniques. That's kind of the baseline of what we need to do. Someone asked about accountability. We need to investigate the past. We need a truth commission in the United States. We need to know what's happened. We need to hold people accountable. And I'm happy to say in New York State, actually on the professional side, there's a bill that's going to be introduced in the legislature. And those of you who are in New York should work on this to hold health professionals who are involved in torture accountable. Third, we have to end the professional role in supporting interrogation. And to help this, I invite all of you. Here's my plug. I don't have a book to plug, but I have a campaign to plug. We'd love to have you help. We have a campaign against torture at physiciansforhumanrights.org. Thank you so much.